How are you developing and encouraging youth voice? This is Carrie Rabideau, and I thank you for listening to the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series. In this podcast, I am joined by Extension educator Karen Baranek, who will share with us a model she uses to help us think about the different levels of youth voice and the how and really the why we should strive for getting to the top of that ladder that she's going to talk about. So Karen, I'll bring you into this conversation. Thank you for joining me in this podcast today.
Thank you so much for asking me.
This is your first time on the Youth Development podcast series, so a welcome to you. Will you start off by telling us then about your work and then also bring us into this youth voice concept and why that's important to the work that you do?
Absolutely. Within my role, I get to work very closely with the citizenship and leadership team, and all of our programming is with youth, which makes it super exciting and inspirational for all of the adults that get to work with the youth on that programming. And since our programming is with youth, we include our youth from the very beginning of the programming. They're the decision makers. They help with the planning process. They help with the implementation process. And they also are key in the reflection process. And so it's really that youth and adult partnership that allows us to build such strong programs for our youth, whether it's at the state level, at the regional level, or at the local level.
And tell us a little bit about your role and where you're at and what you do for us at the center.
I've been with the University of Minnesota for 5 years. I've spent 3 in the regional role, and then before that, I spent 2 years at the county level. But I did come from across the state border from South Dakota, where I worked with the Youth Development Program for 8 years.
Well, I thank you again for joining me, and let's continue this conversation on youth voice. And I think all of us have an idea of what it is, but will you dig a little bit deeper? What is true, authentic youth voice? And then let's talk a little bit about why. Why is this so important to incorporate into our youth leadership programming?
And I think that what is a little pretty important to think about, so we know the why behind it. So if you think back of youth development, when we first started thinking about doing programs for youth, we as adults, we knew what youth needed, and we needed to provide opportunities for youth to do things. And then we started realizing that, hey, these young people, they know stuff. Maybe we should ask them questions. They could tell us things. And so then we started thinking of them as people we could interview, or a group of young people we could talk to in a focus group type setting to learn stuff from them. And now is a really exciting period in youth development, is we're really thinking about them as they can facilitate. They can be organizers. They can be those advocates. They could be staff. They could be our policymakers in helping write legislation. Their role can be so much more than just sharing with adults what they need to know, but that they're on the same level as the adults and really at the same table making those decisions together. Is a little bit of the history of how we think about youth voice. You asked also, why do we want to do that? Which is a good question. The most easiest is, we work for Minnesota 4-H. We believe in positive youth development. How much more positive can their youth development be as if we allow them to practice it along the way? So we're giving them opportunities to learn and to grow. And when I say they, I mean youth, but I also mean the adults. Because anytime you as an adult sit at a table with young people, you cannot help but learn something before you walk away from that table, whether it's about yourself, about maybe some of your preconceived biases about working with youth, or if it's just that complete energy and re-excitement in your organization that the youth bring to that table as well. So you think about the why, those are also the benefits of why you want to include those young people at the table. Many times they also improve the organization itself. Every once in a while an organization continues to do the same thing year after year because, well, that's what the community wants or that's what's easy. Possibly, what happens if half the people at the table are under the age of 20? Does that change the conversation? Very likely. And so you get that benefit of hearing from all of the constituents of your community, and sometimes that reinvigoration of energy happens as well. Many times a young person can like see an issue that has maybe been an underlying issue for a while, but no one's named it. And they're willing to do that naming because they see an issue, they want to solve it. sorts of situation. So they're also very helpful in that regard to organizations or groups.
You're really describing our programming with youth. Instead of that, you know, we can do really good programming for youth. We can really do impactful, exciting programming with youth.
Absolutely.
And so many who listen to this podcast know that we often base podcast series on blogs that our colleagues have written. And you did write a blog. That one was titled How to Get to the Top of the Youth Voice Ladder. And that ladder is referring to a model that helps us, you know, be more intentional about how we incorporate this youth voice so that we can be programming with youth. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So when I was thinking about writing my blog about youth voice, one of the first research things that came to mind was not the newest piece of research, but a really reliable and existing piece of research by Roger Hart. This came out in the 80s, which when you think about youth development in the 80s, does not look anything like youth development 2018. But this research is still so applicable for today, which is why I had to include it in there. So Roger Hart used this image of a ladder. So there's 8 rungs on this ladder. And just like as a child trying to walk up the ladder, it gets a little bit harder towards the top. And so when you think about that bottom rung of the ladder in Roger Hart's theory, he talked about young people as being not being participants, whether that means they were being manipulated or were just for decoration or were that tokenism. But then he didn't stop. He kept going up to the ring 4, 5, 6, where youths are being assigned but informed. So what that could look like would be many times we wanted to start adding this youth representative on the board, but neither the young person nor the adults on the board were prepared for that. And so it sort of-ish worked. They were there, but what does that look like? Well, then you move a little bit farther up in the ladder and you train and prepare the young person and the adult to be on that board. And then you're like, okay, this is making more sense. This is why this person or a couple people joined our organization. There is this purpose. As you move farther up on his ladder, they start talking about having that shared decision-making with the youth, but being adult-initiated. So we're not quite up to the top yet. And then you get to where the youth are leading, they're managing, they're organizing, they're initiating some action. And then at the very top is that young people and adults are doing that shared decision-making. And of course, the goal is always to get to the top of the ladder, but any progress up the ladder is a positive. You're not going to go from rung 1 to rung 8 in 2 months. That's just not going to happen. But that progression is the excitement and the journey that many organizations will go through.
Yeah, I totally agree with you that the metaphor of the ladder is so helpful in thinking about this process of bringing youth with us. We never start at the top of the ladder, right?
Never. And many times we make a couple of mistakes along our way and we may drop down one because, oh, it's really hard because the youth got busy or this happened or they didn't show up to this meeting or something happens. It's that continuing effort to put into it and recognizing the benefits that we talked about just a few minutes ago of this is why you want to do it. No one ever said this work was easy. If it was easy, we'd all be at the top and we'd start there. But it's the intentional effort and initiative to make the effort to have that youth voice.
Now you cite 5 concepts that help programs develop and encourage youth voice. If you would, could we talk through these 5 concepts and you give us, you know, what those are and how we achieve those. So the first one is support.
Yes. So this is adults providing that support and encouragement for youth to be involved, to maybe take a risk, and they may not succeed at the risk that very first time, but you're able to provide that support that if they take this risk, you're behind them. You've got their back sort of mentality. But also giving the youth that power, that they feel the power, that they're able to make that choice to say something that's been on their mind for the past 3 meetings, but they're not sure what the reaction will be, so they're not sure if they should say it. But to provide that support for them to feel like their opinion does matter and that you want to know what they're thinking and you want more information from them. Many times you can think back, maybe 5 years, maybe 50 years since you were a child, but everyone can think back to that person that really listened to them that adults that really listened to you as a child. Think back to that person. What did they do? Okay, now just mimic some of those actions and you'll have it.
Talk a little bit more about the risks we can provide. You know, some of us hear risky behavior and our minds immediately go somewhere. What do you mean by that? And providing support for them to take risks.
Absolutely. You're actually referring to a blog I wrote last year as well about healthy risk-taking behavior. And many times, yes, risk-taking behavior does not have to be that negative connotation. I think of it as that positive of a kindergartner getting on a school bus. That's a risk for that five-year-old because they may have never done that before. But if the parent is sitting at the side to help them that first day or week, by now when it's April, they're jumping on the bus and not even looking back at their parents or adults in their lives as they get on that bus because they're confident to be able to do that. Many times you think about it's summer season's coming up. And so you think of your child going off to summer camp. That could be scary for some youth. And they may say, nope, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to stay at home all summer. Well, what would be the best for the child and being able to provide them opportunities to take that risk? So providing that support of whether it's needing to know a little bit more about what for them to expect when they get there, just being able to be supportive of them in that environment. We think of our older youth going off to college or going to the state fair. Some of those are scary things. And yet it's a place where we build that environment for them to take a healthy risk. Youth who don't have that opportunity sometimes struggle with adulthood. So if we can provide them those opportunities from the time they're young and give them small increment steps along the way, it will become second nature as an adult.
Because they've been supported in those risks along the way.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, let's move on to the second concept that you cite is prepare.
Yes, so I referred to this a little bit with the ladder. You think of putting a young person on a board, but if they don't know what to expect or they don't know what the expectations of them are, well, we just want to hear from you. Well, what does that mean? And so being able to prepare that youth to really have a role on that board or organization. And many times, depending on the size of the board, if there's eight adults, so one youth member, are you providing that environment for them to really voice their opinion? Or should there be a more equitable number of youth and adults at the table? But then I think the other flip side is to prepare those adults for what a young person may change in their board. Maybe you'll have to step back and explain a little bit more about the budget. But also don't make biases that just because they're 16, they don't understand budgets. They've probably taken more accounting classes than you as an adult have had. So being able to set aside any biases you may have as well to prepare to be able to have that true youth and adult partnership. Another way that you can prepare is if you're going to ask a young person to speak in a more public setting. Are you preparing them for that public setting? I think of a couple weeks ago when we were at Washington, D.C. for National 4-H Conference, Finn from Kitson County was able to join me with meeting with Representative Colin Peterson. Well, we just didn't walk into Colin Peterson's office. We had a conversation beforehand to prepare both the youth and the adult to speak into a representative in person, but just being able to build a place where they can succeed and have that preparation prior to just jumping in full force and then it not feeling so good and then being hesitant to do it again.
Your next concept refers to authenticity, providing an authentic choice.
Yes. So as a young person, did you get to choose what they ate at the program that you were offering? That's probably an example of an unauthentic choice. Now, I would always give you the choice of what to eat for foods because they are very capable of making those decisions, but they're also very capable of a lot more authentic choices versus, would you like to do program A or program B? Would you like to have tacos or pizza? Let's give them some real choices there instead of, okay, the group decided to focus on service learning, letting the young people do the research. Where are the places that you really want to learn more about? Is it about food hunger? Is it about child advocacy? What do they want to learn more about and what's available in their community to do it in versus them saying, yep, we want to learn about environmental sciences and the adult deciding we're going to pick up the city park. Is that really incorporating the youth voice? So really being able to give them true choices while they're at the table.
Your fourth concept is engineer success. What does that mean for the youth worker?
So success is this word that we don't have one definition for. And I think that's okay. But I think sometimes as adults, we have this vision of success means that we went through A, B, C, D, E to get this fantastic program. And there was no bumps on the road. Everyone just did what they wanted to do. And it happened. Well, that's great. That could be your version of success as an adult. But what would be the version of a success for a young person? So many times it's just having that conversation before the planning even starts of what are the real goals of this program? Is the goals of the program to just offer it? Or is the goals of the program to maybe tweak the program, to totally change it up, to change the target audience, to change the location? What are the real goals of the program? And to talk about those. And then also realize that success looks different for everybody. And I don't really think this matters if you're an adult or a young person, but that success looks different. Lily, think about having the youth have that opportunity to plan. For them, that may be their success, is they have the opportunity to help with the planning portion of it. It might be having them help understand what the problem is. If the young people at the table are saying, well, this is the problem with this program, maybe that never even happens. What would happen then?
And Karen, the fifth and final concept we're discussing today is practice inclusiveness.
So you all know at those meetings that one person who talks the most? Carrie's laughing.
No.
You don't know that person? Yes. So I don't think this matters again if you're a young person or adult. There may be some person at the table who chooses to voice their opinion louder and more stringent than anybody else. And so this is where the facilitator of the conversation really gets to practice those facilitation skills and making sure that everyone's voice is heard. And as I was rereading my blog, I talked about as an adult, build ways to make sure you can hear everybody. And then I thought, you know, I was showing my bias there is to that I put the word adult there. What if the young person is the facilitator? What would that look like? Would they be able to build those skills and make sure that everyone's voice was heard better than an adult would? Very, very possibly. They know which person in the group is the quiet person or which person maybe needs to be have their 2 minutes and then share the rest of the time with the other people present. But then also thinking about different facilitation skills to make sure that not everyone is comfortable talking. Say there's 30 people in the meeting and you ask a question that's just going to be answered popcorn style. Not everyone's comfortable answering that. And again, young person or adult, I'm not sure it matters. I'm not always comfortable answering in front of 30 people. But doing some different activities where maybe they pair up. So you have two people and each of them share their ideas with each other. And then you report back to the large group. Because sometimes it's easier to share your neighbor's really good idea than it is to share your very good idea. Otherwise, other small groups, if there is 16 different questions and you're going to have these group of 40 people answer all 16 questions, break them up and have them talk to them about them in small groups, throw the whiteboard up on the walls and start writing ideas that way. Some youth don't want to use their physical voice. They feel much more comfortable writing out their idea. Doesn't mean it's better or worse idea, but just being able to provide environments for you to know what's happening in that head of theirs that they're thinking of, because there's really good stuff out there. It's just, we have to figure out how to allow them to express it.
Karen, thank you for being a part of this podcast today and sharing both the what and the why of incorporating youth voice into our programming. And what I really appreciate about this conversation is that you being honest, it's not easy. And but it does take that intentional planning. And if you do use this approach, you will see the benefits with the young people and some exciting programming, like, you know, many of the stories that you told throughout as we went through this podcast. So thank you for being a part of this today.
Well, thank you. And I just hope the conversation continues as we think about all the different places youth voice could be incorporated into.
Well, and along those lines, I will invite anyone listening to go to our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. You can find information there on Youth Voice and other youth leadership topics. You'll also discover that research, training, and events. And we always invite you to check out our Minnesota 4-H program if you are not a part of it already. Also, read and comment on our Youth Development Insight blog. And as we cited, Karen is on there with a number of blog posts, and the conversations that happen are valuable and interesting. And I invite you to be a part of that as well. With that, we will be wrapping up this podcast. My name is Carrie Robidoux, and I am joined today by Karen Baranek from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.